Today's show is brought to you courtesy of Blinky's, a different kind of shopping experience. Hey, it's your Uncle Blanky. We just opened our newest location of Blinky's out at the S&M Family Fun Center. Check out some of our newest toys like the Hunter Biden, Dude, Where's My Laptop action figure, complete with two keys of simulated cocaine and, for a limited time, a Russian sex worker. Or get the whole line of the Careless Bears like Go Away Bear, Do I Look Like a Give a Shit Bear, and the very popular Go Fuck Yourself Bear. Blinky's is rated PG-13, located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4 across from Knobs and Knockers or Dick's Liquor.
Due to the extreme nature of this program, listener discretion is advised. The subject matters may include topics of substance usage, sex, historical events that may be sensitive to some listeners, and foul language. Things discussed may not be considered politically correct in this overly sensitive environment. They may not be appropriate for listeners under the age of 13. As well as some listeners may find things offensive no matter the age, again, listener discretion is advised.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to GXO, another episode of Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. Focusing on everything pop culture from the greatest generation ever, Generation X. So if it happened between 1960 and 1999, we're going to discuss it, like movies, music, TV, and even a bit of history from that year. Who knows? You may just learn something before it's done. And if you're lucky, this old man may just regale you with a story or two from his own life and experiences. I'm Robert Pop, your host, coming to you from beautiful Podunk, Nebraska.
Hey kids, it's your Uncle Blinky. As you know, we've just opened our newest location of Blinky's out at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4. Come check out some of our newest toys like the Dig Your Own Grave playset, the 50 Shades of Grey crayons, and the Cursed Amulet. Trust me, it's fine. Our grocery aisle has Lonely Man TV dinners, Porn Flakes, and Flaming Hot Cheeto Crunch cereal. Hit the men's department and get some Elon's Musk and smell like $1 billion. Blinky's is rated PG-13, located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4, across the street from Knobs and Knockers and Dick's Liquor.
The views and opinions expressed are just that, Rob's views and opinions. He is not always politically correct, and they may not match up with your own opinions. It is not his intentions to offend anyone. Hopefully you find the shows entertaining and informative as well. Please note, Rob is not a professional historian, but he has done a lot of research for this show. With that being said, mistakes happen, but he will do his best to minimize those. Keep in mind, Rob is just some nut with a microphone.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to this week's episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. This week, going to be going all the way back to 1991, and we're going to look at the Jerry Springer Show. But first, as always, we're going to have our history lesson. So, in Russia, Soviet Union, General Secretary of the CPSU, Boris Yeltsin. Here in the United States, King George I was our sitting president. And in the United Kingdom, Prime Minister John Major. Top headlines for that year, Operation Desert Storm. United Nations coalition force led by the United States, including many Arab and European countries, bomb Iraqi forces in Kuwait. And after 1 month of bombing, land invasion forces Iraq out of Kuwait and back to Iraq. That should be like a rap song. Get you back to Iraq. The United States-Canada Air Quality Agreement becomes effective immediately after it is signed by Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney and King George I, also known as the Acid Rain Treaty. It was created to address the issues associated with transboundary air pollution, and over time has reduced the amount of acid rain associated with the problem. The Soviet Union takes its first official steps to break up the USSR during September of 1991, when the Congress of People's Deputies voted for its dissolution. The following countries all gained independence when the Soviet Union broke up. And I'm going to butcher a few of these, so I'm so sorry. Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, Ukraine, Moldova, Lithuania, Latvia, Belarus, Estonia. I didn't do too bad. There was only one in there I really fucked up. Mikhail Gorbachev, he resigned as the president of the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union officially ceased to exist. Boris Yeltsin won the first free election for the Russian people as the popularly elected president. Well, good for them. The Warsaw Pact, the military alliance between the Soviet Union and its Eastern European neighbors, ends. Lech Walesa, the Polish workers' president, is elected president of Poland. In Israel, the Dead Sea Scroll is unveiled. Winnie Mandela, wife of Nelson Mandela, is given a 6-year prison sentence for her part in the kidnapping of 4 youths. Slovenia and Croatia declare independence from Yugoslavia and the start of the Balkan War. The Ethiopian People's Revolution Democrat Front ends 17 years of Marxist rule in Ethiopia. Journalist Terry Anderson is released after 7 years of captivity as a hostage in Beirut. Terry Waite, the special envoy to the Archbishop of Canterbury, is released after more than 4 years of captivity. 70 tornadoes break out in the central United States that year, killing 17. Jeffrey Dahmer is arrested in July of 1991, and the remains of 11 men and boys are found in his Milwaukee, Wisconsin apartment. Mike Tyson is arrested and charged with raping Desiree Washington. Fucking Mike. Former U.S. postal worker Joseph Harris kills his former girlfriend and her fiancé and 2 former co-workers in the post office in Ridgewood, New Jersey, which resulted in the phrase, going postal. Okay. Police brutality captured on film in California in the case of Rodney King, where he was just wanting everybody to get along. And I'm right there with you too, Rodney. I'd probably take a beating as well. But that ended up being part of that year's history. Professor Anita Hill, who is an ugly woman, accused Judge Clarence Thomas, who is an ugly man, of sexual harassment. And the one thing about this sexual harassment case that I remember, and it was probably the most disgusting, wasn't the fact that, you know, he wanted to do a little slap and tickle. The biggest thing was is that she accused him of taking his pubes and putting them on a piece of pizza. That, what the fuck? Where the fuck do you come up with that shit? I mean, when has that ever thought of being a good turn on? Fucking Thomas. Fucking Clarence Thomas. Fucking Anita Hill. Oh, my God. They just, ugh, yeah. Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman. Unfortunately, he was arrested that year in a Florida adult movie theater. I don't want anybody to sit there and think that he got arrested for doing this, like watching, you know, Aladdin or some shit. It was an adult movie theater for adults for indecent exposure. Notable deaths that year. Freddie Mercury, lead singer of the band Queen, issued a public statement confirming that he had been stricken with AIDS. The very next day, he died of complications. You know, and I know back then, AIDS was just a, I don't know, it was so new, it was so scary for hetero, bi, or homosexuals, you know, everybody was figuring, you know, how not to choke on using dental dam, You know, the condom market just went skyrocketing. And now, you don't hear about it. You just don't. I mean, have we almost wiped it out? I don't know. Other notable deaths that year, Fred McMurray, wasn't a big fan of him. He was in some Disney movies. He was also on My Three Sons. Nancy Culp, she was on the Beverly Hillbillies. Michael Landon, he passed away. Red Fox, he was a dirty, filthy old man. He passed away that year. By the way, if you've never heard any of his comedy, find that on YouTube or anywhere out there online. He was filthy. I mean, yeah, but he's the one that started it. Richard Pryor picked up the torch and went with it, and then Eddie Murphy went off with it. So Danny Thomas, was never a big fan of him. The Danny Thomas Show, and then, of course, he had, I don't know, whatever his telethon was, which was great. I mean, he was doing what he could for St. Jude. That's what it was. And he did a lot of good things, but I never cared for him as an actor. Bert Convy, I don't know whether to call him an actor or not. I mean, he was, to me, all I remember him really being is a guy with a perm that hosted, game shows. I mean, yeah, he was in Cannonball Run. I don't remember if it was one or two. But I really don't ever remember seeing Bert Convy really anywhere outside of the CBS studios. One of the most visionary men that had lived up to that point passed away that year, giving us Star Trek, The Next Generation, and all of the animated and some of the movies from the 80s. Gene Roddenberry passed away. And to carry that on, his son has really done a very good job of carrying that forward. So, because we ended up with, in order of release, we had Deep Space Nine, which is really kind of the one that most people just, I don't know, they don't ignore it, but it's not forefront. Voyager, that was pretty darn good. Enterprise, that took a little bit to take off, but I did enjoy the backstory, the prequel, if you will, to the time from when Zefram Cochran meets the Vulcans after we discover warp capability, to where the Federation starts to come to be. So, and then after that, the next live action would have been Discovery, and then Strange New Worlds. And then, of course, then you've got Picard. And then there's some cartoons and that type of stuff. But thank you, Gene, for giving us the Star Trek universe. Dr. Seuss, he passed away. Tennessee Ernie Ford, he passed away. I think he finally got tired of singing about 16 ton. You load 16 ton, and what do you get? Miles Davis, he passed away. And country singer Dottie West passed away that year. Cost of living in 1991. Average income was $29,430. Average monthly rent was $4.95. A gallon of gas was $1.12. A pound of bacon for $1.95, and a dozen eggs were 85 cents. And for whatever reason, my source did not give me the average cost of a house that year. Had to be like 3 to 4 times higher than what your yearly salary is. That was the trend we were headed. So you can just almost imagine, $90,000 to $120,000. So, in the music store, oh, God. I always said I was just going to leave this fucker right off of the list, but I can't. In 1991, Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams. God, I cannot stand... Bryan Adams and Mariah Carey are the two artists that I just cannot stand. I cannot change the channel fast enough when they come on. I Want to Sex You Up by Color Me Bad. That was a good song. Rush Rush by Paula Abdul. That was okay. Gonna Make You Sweat, Everybody Dance Now by C+C Music Factory. And I Like the Way The Kissing Game by High Five. I think I remember that song. Top 5 songs on the R&B chart. I Love Your Smile by Shanice. That's a good song. After the Dance by 4Play featuring El DeBarge. Too Legit to Quit by MC Hammer. That was, man, you know, if he made it into the top five, that was a song that was just trying to cash in on Can't Touch This. Wow. Black or White by Michael Jackson. That was a good song. And finally, by C.C. Peniston. Wow, that way that's spelled. It's Peniston. On the country chart, My Next Broken Heart by Brooks and Dunn. I can relate with that. For My Broken Heart by Reba McEntire. I can relate with that. Love Me by Colin Ray. That is a song that it touched me because it reminded me of my grandparents who I had recently lost by 1991. My grandma passed away in 89. My grandfather passed away in 90. So, and they had a love that I don't think is matched by too many. Mama, Don't Forget to Pray for Me by Diamond Rio. I hope my mom, where she is, she continues to pray for me because I need all the help I can get. And Anymore by Travis Tritt. The one-hit wonders were all over the place that year. We had the slow song of One More Try by Timmy T. That was a good song. Get Here by Olita Adams. That was another kind of mellow song that just said, hey, you know, whatever you got to do, just get here to me. Then we had I Touch Myself by the Divinyls. That one, yeah. That one there, on the heels of that, we had Rico Suave by Gerardo. And I still like Weird Al's version of that Taco Grande. And then I think probably one of the greatest songs that was released in the 90s, and it's very difficult for me to say that, Walking in Memphis by Mark Cohn. On the crime beat, University of Iowa shooting was a mass shooting that occurred in Iowa City on November 1st, 1991. Gang Liu, a 28-year-old former graduate student of University of Iowa, killed three members of the physics and astronomy department faculty and an associate vice president for academic affairs and a fellow student, then seriously injured another student working at the university's campus before committing suicide. On Friday, November 1st, Gang Liu attended a meeting for the Theoretical Space Plasma Physics Research Group in the conference room on the third floor of Van Allen Hall at the university's campus. A few minutes after the meeting began, Liu shot three attendees of the meeting with a .38 special, then proceeded to the second floor to shoot the chairman of the department in his office. After the shootings at Van Allen Hall, Liu walked three blocks to Jessup Hall, to the office of T. Ann Cleary, an associate vice president of academic affairs and grievance officer at the university, and promptly shot her in the head. Liu had filed several grievances about not being nominated for the, bear with me, the Spritzerbach Prize. Cleary died the following day at a University of Iowa hospital. Lou then shot Maya Rudolfo Sio-san, a 20-year-old student, temporary employee of the Office of Academic Affairs, for unknown reasons. Maya survived, but was left paralyzed from the neck down. Lou had intended to kill university president Hunter Rawlings III, but he was attending the Iowa-Ohio State football game in Columbus, Ohio at the time. Gang Lou was found in room 203 of Jessup Hall with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Lou shortly died after the police arrived. This guy, okay, here's some backstory on him. So he was a 28-year-old Chinese graduate student, and he had received his doctoral degree in physics and astronomy from the university in May of 91. The 18-year-old Lou, 10 years prior, began studying physics at Peking University in Beijing, where he passed the CUSPA exam in 1984 and was admitted to study in the United States, becoming a graduate student at the University of Iowa. As a graduate student, Lou was primarily a loner who was perceived as, by at least one other graduate student, to have psychological problems if challenged, and was reported to have had several abusive tantrums. Lou was infuriated because of his dissertation titled Study of the Critical Ionization Velocity Effect by the Particle in Cell Simulation did not receive the prestigious dissertation prize. I'm not even going to try to say that name again, which included a monetary award of $2,500. The Tiananmen Square protests of 1989 led many Chinese students to become eager to stay in the United States, and Lou believed that winning the prize would have made it easier for him to get a job and not have to return to China. Normally, Lou would have received a postdoctoral research position, but there was not enough money to support him. In the months prior to the shooting, Lou was still living in Iowa City and wrote 5 letters explaining for the reasons of his planned actions. According to one of the university officials, 4 of the 5 letters were written in English and 1 was written in Chinese, intended to be mailed to news organizations. The letters have never been released to the public. However, Edwin Chen's book, Deadly Scholarship, includes a statement by Lou intended to be read after his attack and suicide, which Laura Hamlet characterized as a manifesto, and in translation, a letter by Lou to his sister. Wow, I just don't remember that. Huh. In the movie theater, we had our choices of these: 101 Dalmatians, An American Tale, Backdraft, Beauty and the Beast, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Love Bill and Ted. Boys in the Hood. That is an awesome movie. Still watch it today. Bugsy, Cape Fear, City Slickers. Loved City Slickers. Curly Sue, Doc Hollywood. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Drop Dead Fred. I hate that movie. Dutch, Dying Young. Ernest, Scared Stupid. Loved all the Ernest movies. Know what I mean? Father of the Bride. Freddy's Dead. That was an okay movie for the Nightmare on Elm Street fans. Fried Green Tomatoes. No, it's not just a movie. It's also an actual dish, which I love to make. So, He Said, She Said. Hook. That was a good movie, Hook. Hot Shots. Hudson Hawk. JFK. Jungle Fever. King Ralph. That sucked. Life Stinks. That wasn't wonderful, but that was a Mel Brooks movie. Little Man Tate, Mobsters, My Girl, New Jack City, Not Without My Daughter, Nothing But Trouble. That sucked. Oscar, I loved Oscar. Point Break, Pure Luck. That movie sucked. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Sleeping with the Enemy, Switch, The Addams Family, The Doors, love The Doors. Silence of the Lambs, love that movie. Thelma and Louise, Toy Soldiers, True Colors, V.I. Wachowski. What About Bob? And Where Angels Fear to Tread. On TV, we had our choices to watch Back to the Future, the cartoon TV series. Candid Camera, the revised Carol Burnett show in 1991. Charlie Rose. If you wanted to be bored to death, you could watch Charlie Rose. The Chuck Woolery Show. I don't remember that. All I remember is him being on Love Connection. Clarissa Explains It All with Melissa Joan Hart. The Commish, the revision of Dark Shadows. Although, Darkwing Duck, we talked about that last season with the Disney Afternoon. Hated this show, Dinosaurs, Not the Mama. God, I hated that fucking show. Doug, Dynasty the Reunion, Erie, Indiana. Harry and the Hendersons, the TV show, hated that. Home Improvement, though, that came out. That was a great show, lasted a long time. I'll Fly Away, don't remember that show. The Jenny Jones Show, not quite as controversial as our topic for today. The Land of the Lost, they tried to reboot that in 1991. That didn't work. Liquid Television, that was weird. The Maury TV talk show, and now he's just basically gone to nothing more than paternal tests. The Montel Williams Show, I mean, my God, everybody had their own no fucking shows. Mr. Bogus, don't remember that. The new WKRP in Cincinnati, I really don't remember that. I have had to go back and research. I think that was a Mandela thing. Honestly, I don't remember it ever being on, and I know that I would have watched anything that said WKRP on it. So, don't remember it. Don't think it existed in my timeline. Let's see. God, just so many shitty shows. Nurses, Pros and Cons, Pyramid, Reasonable Doubt. I don't remember any of those shows. Ren and Stimpy was on. Rugrats, they started. Hated that. Nickelodeon had Salute Your Shorts. That was weird. Scene of the Crime. Don't remember that. Shop Till You Drop. Silk Stockings. That was a okay murder mystery show. It was kind of trying to be all sexy, like, I don't know, like a California version of Miami Vice, where it was more private investigator. I don't know. I don't think it worked. Step by Step, we talked about Suzanne Summers on that when we had her tribute. The Super Mario World, that was the cartoon TV version. Tasmania, he was on. The Toxic Crusaders, that was on, but that had Toxie and I don't know whoever else it was. Where's Wally? No clue. Undercover, don't have any idea. I do. This little game show was on PBS and probably the greatest, one of the greatest TV theme songs ever. Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? It was a great teaching show for geography and great little, you know, ditty you could sing along with. And then they moved it to a cartoon. Where in the World? Where on Earth? Where in the United States? Yeah. Where in the Galaxy is Carmen Sandiego? I don't know. But it just, it really went downhill from there. So stick around after these break from my fake sponsors, and we're going to talk about the Jerry Springer Show. So stick around with us.
Today's show is brought to you courtesy of Blinky's, a different kind of shopping experience.
Hey, kids, it's your Uncle Blinky. As you know about our newest location out at the Amsterdam Family Fun Center on Highway 4, so come on out and check out some of our newest toys. The Work From Home playset, including Crying Baby, Barking Dog, Video Call Koozies to disguise your beverage of choice. Remember, Halloween is just around the corner, so come on in for some of the best realistic costumes like Third Time Divorced for men and women, the transorbital lobotomy patient complete with drool bib, and the absent father costume, complete with child support court order, blank bus ticket, and a pack of cigarettes. And before you leave, stop in our health and beauty aisle for the men's 13-in-1 shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, mouthwash, shaving cream, deodorant, potted meat product, hemorrhoid cream, hand sanitizer, car wash, laundry detergent, and dish soap. Blinkies is rated PG-13, located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4 across the street from Knobs and Knockers and Dick's Liquor.
Any claims of time travel are purely fictitious and are only meant for entertainment purposes. And honestly, if you believe Rob can travel through time, I only have one question for you. What the hell is wrong with you?
All right, welcome back from that break. Today we're going to be talking about the Jerry Springer Show. It ran for 27 seasons, believe it or not, starting on September 30th, 1991, all the way to July 26th, 2018. The program was unsuccessful in the ratings in its first seasons due to its focus on more political issues. This led to a complete overhaul of the structure, which by the mid-1990s led to the show as it's known today, filled with controversial topics such as incest, adultery, profanity, chanting, physical fights involving a mixture of boxing, wrestling, as well as martial arts, nudity, scantily clad guests, and flashing audience members. Critical response to the show was overwhelmingly negative, and in 2002, TV Guide proclaimed it to be the worst TV show of all time. This critique of the show as trash TV, however, satirically embraced by the show, with the host Springer proudly introducing the program as the worst TV show of all time at the start of each episode. Each episode of Springer began with him coming out on the stage and being greeted by a standing audience made up mostly of college students, pumping the air with their right hand, chanting, "Jerry, Jerry, Jerry." Beginning in the 2000s, Springer would arrive on stage by sliding down a stripper pole, and then he shook hands with some of the audience members before introducing the episode's topic and guest. The topics were usually of an unsophisticated nature, such as infidelity and other relationship squabbles. Oftentimes, the guests would become emotional and get involved in heated arguments with one another, resulting in the outbursts and physical fighting, and once again, the audience chanting, "Jerry, Jerry, Jerry." On-screen security guards, including Steve Wilkos, were present and tasked with managing the potential violence. Once all the guests had their stories told, there was usually a question and answer segment where audience members would ask the guests questions. In the earlier seasons, the questions tended to be a bit more serious. However, these questions gave way to the insults as the show progressed, like, "Go to Oprah." Throughout the show, some women in the audience would sometimes flash their breasts in exchange for cherry beads. Mardi Gras-style beads with the show logo, and in later seasons, serious questions were typically mocked by the crowd, again, as I said, with the chants of "Go to Oprah." Springer would then end the show by giving a formal lecture, sitting by himself on the stage, on the principles of refined values in regards to the featured guests. Springer's, quote, "final thoughts" segment ended with the concluding statement, "Till next time, take care of yourselves and each other," which was his sign-off line during his days as a newscaster in Cincinnati. No, I don't believe it was at WKRP. Generally, Springer tended to present his program standing up, pacing the aisle steps between the seated areas, rather than having a podium or mark on the stage where he would stand. This was thought to protect himself from the potential violence occurring on the stage. He deliberately chose a role as a straight man. He never directly involved himself in the arguments. Quote, "I'm always wearing a suit. I don't curse, and I wasn't in fights involving Jell-O. Springer stated in a retrospective interview. Sometimes the show would have a look back at previous episodes they had rebranded as Classic Springer, some with a false Masterpiece Theater-like theme and patina. These shows were interspersed with commentary from Springer himself, usually before and after the commercial break. So kids, before we knew Springer as Trash TV, he did try a straight show. It debuted, like I said, on September 30th with a family reunion as the topic of its first show. Originally, it was only seen in the five markets in Cincinnati, Macon, St. Louis, Cleveland, and Knoxville. It was dramatically different from the later versions of the show. It started as a issue-oriented and political talk show. A longer version of the commentary, for which Springer had gained local fame as a reporter and anchor, not unlike Phil Donahue during his time. And for its first season, it was even taped at Springer's former station, WLWT, in Cincinnati. Guests early on included Oliver North, Jesse Jackson, and the topics included homelessness and gun politics, as well as the effects of rock music. Ooh. Featuring shock rock star Gigi Allen, El Duce from The Mentors, and Gawar. And I'm not even saying if I'm going to pronounce that correct. It's G-W-A-R, Gawar, Gwar, Grar. For its second season in the fall of 92, the series was purchased by NBC-owned stations, thus allowing it to achieve its full national distribution, and production was moved to its longtime home at Chicago's NBC Tower. In April of 94, Multimedia threatened cancellation if ratings did not improve by that November, which led to the major overhaul that we're all familiar with. The search for higher ratings led to the program gradually towards the provocative topics, becoming more successful as it became geared towards youthful viewers, modeled after Ricky Lake's popular talk show, and by introducing more controversial topics. However, once in a while, there still were some traditional and serious topics featured on the show, even at this time, with the format change. By December 94, the show started featuring such topics as "My Boyfriend Turned Out to Be a Girl," and "I Want My Man to Stop Watching Porn," as well as investigating which are sexier, bigger or smaller breasts on women. In 1995, there were two performances by Comedy Central Latin star Jade Esteban Estrada, and it became a freak show where guests seek their 15 minutes of fame through discussion and demonstrations of deviant behavior. I like that word, deviant. In the late 90s, the show was quite popular and controversial, so much that it caused contemporary shows like Jenny Jones, Maury Povich, Montel Williams, and Ricky Lake to, quote, revamp their own shows to improve ratings. However, major figures in television, along with religious leaders, had called for the show's removal and considered it to be of bad taste. The phrase Jerry Springer Nation began to be used by some who see the program as being a bad influence on the morality of the United States. See, I wouldn't try to blame Jerry Springer for that. In 96, Springer wanted people to send him videotapes explaining why they want to be on Springer. And its extraordinary success has led to be broadcast in dozens of countries. For a time, it was the top-rated daytime talk show in the United States, drawing about 8 million viewers an episode. And yes, I'm guilty of that every chance I had, especially back in the 90s when I was selling cars and we were sitting in the office. Damn right we watched Springer. As the show's popularity peaked in 98, the backlash grew towards its tawdry content. Bob Iger, I'm going to go with Iger, it's I-G-E-R, then chairman of ABC, dubbed it as an embarrassment to the television industry. And then U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, what a fucking putz, implored stations to stop broadcasting it. Fucking Lieberman. Many major companies refused to advertise on the show due to its reputation. The New York Times reported that while the program had higher ratings than Oprah, the cost for advertising was a third of what was being charged by Oprah. Most of the commercials during Jerry Springer were 1-800 numbers for technical schools, personal injury law firms, mortgage lenders, insurance companies, and health services. And, of course, we cannot forget, I have a structured settlement and I need cash now. Call J.G. Wentworth, 877-CASH-NOW, 877-CASH-NOW, as such. The same year, several stations that carried Springer, including WLWT in Cincinnati, where Springer was the news anchor, refused to broadcast the episode, I Married a Horse. What the fuck? I knew that it was fucking deviant, but my God, I'd never fucking had ever even heard of that episode, which led to it being pulled before airing. I caution you, if you decide you want to go try to find that on YouTube, keep in mind some things cannot ever be unseen. Additionally, Barry Diller, the head of Jerry Springer Distribution Studios in USA, ordered producers to eliminate physical fighting between guests, as he had reportedly become upset by the show and its controversies it sparked. Studios USA later permitted fights to remain as long as they were, quote, toned down. The show remained popular, though it lost its position as the most viewed daytime show by June of 99, finishing slightly behind Oprah. And depending on what size she was wearing at the time, that may not have been too hard. In 99, the show was parodied in the film Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. Dr. Evil and his son Scott appeared on the show to discuss being evil, which ends with Dr. Evil and Springer himself brawling on stage. Along with Springer, Steve Wilkos and Todd Schultz played themselves in the movie. In 2000, a married couple, Ralph and Eleanor Panitz, which were guests on an episode, the show entitled Secret Mistresses Confronted, with Mr. Panitz's ex-wife Nancy Campbell Panitz, in which they complained about Ms. Campbell's behavior and accusing her of stalking them. Hours after it was broadcast on July 24, 2000, Ms. Campbell Panitz was found dead in a home that the three were fighting over. And Florida police soon confirmed that they were treating it as a homicide. It was then reported that Mr. Panitz had been issued a first-degree murder warrant for the death and was trying to flee to Canada to avoid prosecution. Upon news of the 52-year-old woman's murder, a spokesperson for the program issued a statement by saying it was a terrible tragedy. In August of 2000, Springer appeared on Larry King Live to discuss the incident, claiming it had nothing to do with the show and that his talk show does not glamorize deviant behavior. On March 27, 2002, after a 10-day trial and 18 hours of deliberation from jurors, Mr. Panitz was convicted of the murder and sentenced to life in prison. In 2003, it was revealed that a group of guests from Hayward, California, faked a love triangle for an appearance on two episodes of the show. One guest in the group was murdered, but Haywood police determined that his appearance was not connected to his murder. In 2005, security director Steve Wilkos became a cult figure of his own and would close each show walking down the hallway, engaging in casual talk with one of the more colorful guests of the preceding episode. He would occasionally host the show. Episodes that he hosted were intended to be more serious in tone than the typical episode of Springer. Wilkos left Jerry Springer at the end of 2006-2007 season to pursue his own talk show, The Steve Wilkos Show, which I think is still on. In 2006, the show was renewed for a 16th season, ending speculation that Springer would leave his talk show to run for elected office in Ohio, where he briefly served as mayor of Cincinnati in the late 1970s. By this time, the show began to poke fun at itself, using taglines like, an hour of your life you'll never get back, and wasting technology since 1991. On May 12, 2006, Springer celebrated his 3,000th episode by throwing a party on the show. But nobody showed up but Jerry. It was intended that way, for comedy. He showed many clips, including rare excerpts from the show. On July 15, 2007, it was announced that Springer was picked up by NBC Universal through the 2009-2010 series. Years. On May 19, 2009, the last recorded episode at WMAQ-TV's NBC Tower in Chicago, where it had been videotaped since 92. Midway through the second season, beginning with the 2009-2010 season, production was moved to the Stamford Center for the Arts in Connecticut. After NBC received tax credits from the state of Connecticut to move Springer, along with Maury, Steve Wilkos, and NBC Sports. Springer was not happy with the move, but he understood the financial reasons for which it was done. After moving to Stamford, the show went through a number of changes. The set became more colorful with new lighting, new chairs for guests, two security guards, even changed its music, its theme music. In October 2014, it was announced that the show had been renewed for through NBC and through 2018. On June 13, 2018, the industry publication Broadcasting and Cable reported that the series had ceased production and that the 2018-19 season would be solely consistent of reruns. The show's ratings had dropped to about 1 million viewers per episode. The final show aired on July 26, 2018. Jerry had originally intended to retire after the show had ended. Instead, NBC kept him working, convinced him to work in a new courtroom show called Judge Jerry. He also hosted a dating game show called Baggage, which aired on GSN from 2010 to 2015. In January 2014, Springer hosted an investigation discovery series, Tabloid. Jerry was a lot more than what you saw as a ringmaster of his own circus. Jerry married Mickey Velton in 1973, and the couple had a daughter, Katie, in 1976. She was born with a birth defect where she didn't have nasal passages, which she required immediate surgery after birth. She was blind as well as deaf in one ear. In 2006 interview, Katie stated that her parents were always supportive despite her health complications and that they didn't raise her any differently. In 2006, Jerry donated $230,000 to Park School in Chicago, where his daughter worked as an assistant teacher to help construct a high-tech facility called Katie's Corner for students with disability. I think that's damn nice. Springer died at his home in Evanston, Illinois, April 27, 2023, at the age of 79. A spokesperson for the family had said he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer a few months prior to his death. Steve Wilkos, former Jerry Springer Show bodyguard and friend, paid tribute to his colleague, saying, "Other than my own father, Jerry was the most influential man in my life. Everything I have today I owe to Jerry. He was the smartest, most generous, kindest person I've ever known. My wife and I are devastated. We will miss him terribly." He was buried at Memorial Park Cemetery in Skokie, Illinois. Rest well, Jerry. Thanks for the next week. If you'll stick around with me, we're going to start our haunted Halloween month, and we're going to talk about aliens and the guy who really brought him to the forefront for me. So, until then, to quote Mr. Springer, until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Hey kids, it's your Uncle Blinky. We just opened our newest location of Blinky's out on Highway 4 at the S&M Family Fun Center. Come on out and check out some of our newest toys, like the Let Me Talk to Your Manager Karen action figure. Store manager is sold separately. Or in our candy aisle, the Reese's Piece. It's just one piece for those with no willpower. The Starburst Breakfast Chews. Eggs, bacon, sausage, hash brown, and pancake with maple syrup flavors. And pick up the latest Harry Colin book. All My Friends Have Ghosted Me, A True Story. Blinky's is rated PG-13, located at the S&M Family Fun Center on Highway 4, across the street from Knobs and Knockers and Dick's Liquors.
This has been Generation Extraordinary. The views and opinions are Rob's and Rob's alone. Any claims of time travel are purely fictional. The music and audio clips are not Rob's or GXO's, and in most cases were downloaded through his paid YouTube subscription and are only used for entertainment purposes. GXO is a production of Popeye Enterprises. Its host, creator, producer, and editor is Robert Pop. Co-producer is Harley Quinn. If you are a fan of the show, please show your support by going on to Spotify and follow us, like and share. It seems like such a small thing to do, but it really does help. For more information, support, suggestions, or to contact us, go to the website www.genxord.com. Thanks for listening.